Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Wednesday, November 10th. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith, who is live on location in Carlsbad, California, at the GM meetings this week. Ben, thanks to take the time. I know it's busy down there. Maybe just describe to us the scene, like paint the picture for us. What's it like on the ground at the GM meetings?
I mean, the GM meetings are definitely, I think, my favorite compared to the winter meetings. It's a little more peaceful. You still have a lot of people here, and these meetings didn't take place last year. So no one was able to go to these. No one was able to have these kind of conversations that, you know, usually it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. It's a lot of setting things up for later in the off season, but it's still an important period of time because you do need that information to make decisions, whether it's on trades or free agents. So it is an important period of time. And I sense that, you know, the people here, whether it's agents or executives from teams, even media members, I think people are glad to be back at them, especially with the likelihood that the winter meetings are probably going to be canceled this year. It is probably that one chance in the baseball calendar for people to get together. So in that sense, I think it's kind of the calm before the storm with the CBA stuff. It's at a really nice setting. Carlsbad, California is a beautiful spot. They picked a really nice hotel to have it at. And so there's a lot going on, but as these things go, I mean, compared to how wild the winter meetings can be with kind of the media frenzy, the thousands of job seekers, it's relatively peaceful. And so far, there hasn't been a ton in the way of transactions, but I think that's to be expected at this time of year.
Yeah, and in a traditional offseason, you would definitely see more transactional activity at the winter meetings than you would at the GM meetings. I think in this offseason, you're not going to see anything until 2022, unfortunately. But like the GM meetings typically, and I bet this is still the case this year, has been used just as a place to gather information and to have preliminary discussions because I don't know that every front office in baseball operates this way. I think most of them do, and I know the Blue Jays do. They like to get a sense of the market, and they like to get a sense of what's available, where the expectations of every free agent they might be interested in are at, what they would be open to, what type of trade possibilities there are out there. So there's just like a ton of due diligence that has to occur. And you could obviously do a lot of that via text message or phone calls when you're at the Rogers Center, and you can always hop on with people, but it helps being there in person and being able to have like a face-to-face meeting with, you know, a Scott Boras, who is going to have like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 players that might line up with the Blue Jays this winter. You can sit down and talk about each of those guys, just get a sense of where the opportunities and values might lie. The Blue Jays, I know, want all of that information before they do anything too substantial.
Totally. And, you know, I think that when we talk about opportunities or values, or, you know, you hear that from a GM, we're here to gather information, we're really pleased with the information we've gathered. I mean, of course, that sounds superficial. It's kind of obscures what's actually happening. But, you know, to go back to the analogy we used a lot of the time last off season, where you have this, you're in a grocery store and you're trying to figure out.
You brought it back.
Well, I think it holds up. Even a year later, I do think it holds up. And so, you know, if you're shopping, you can't just walk into your Loblaws blind. Like, you have to have a sense of what the prices are. And so what's happening right now is all these GMs are walking around the superstore frantically trying to understand what the prices are for the various people that they are thinking of paying substantial money for. So that's what's happening, and they have to do it. You can't just complete your shopping without knowing what the prices are. So that's what's happening. They are trying to determine that. It takes time. And so they're asking Scott Boras, and Scott Boras, like most agents, doesn't spell this out explicitly at this time of year, but they might say, you know, we're really trying to find, you know, a long-term fit for this client. In other words, we want to max out years. Or they might say, you know, this guy, he really would prefer to stay on the West Coast. And so that tells you that money isn't the only thing there. And so that information you can't get when Carlos Correa is playing in a World Series game for the Houston Astros, as he was last week. Can't do it. He's playing in the World Series. But now it's possible, and all of that stuff is happening.
The other sort of yearly disclaimer that we have to put out at this time of year annually is that the Blue Jays are going to be interested in a lot of players. And you're going to hear a lot of Blue Jays have expressed interest in, Blue Jays have checked in on. Expect that. let it roll off your back. Don't get too upset or too worried or too excited. Like, don't feel any way about it, because the Blue Jays are going to call just about every free agent. There's maybe one that they're not going to engage with that I can think of off the top of my head.
Perhaps a diminutive right-hander who formerly starred in Toronto.
But aside from that, I bet you the Blue Jays go check in on just about everyone. They're going to call every team that might be dealing players. They're going to call the Oakland Athletics, Cincinnati Reds, Cleveland Guardians. Everybody's getting a call, so don't be surprised. I wonder if the difference this offseason, as opposed to ones prior, is that the Blue Jays will, for lack of a better word, be used less. So there might be, like, I think in the past, a lot of the speculation or rumors around the Blue Jays when they're involved with certain players, a lot of times that's just agencies coming out and saying, like, yeah, no, the Blue Jays checked in on this guy, which I'm sure is accurate. And they're just trying to drum up a market and build up a market for their client, when maybe the Blue Jays aren't necessarily willing to bid to the absolute, like, high tier that it's going to take. The top price is going to take to acquire that player. I wonder if that's a little different this year. And I wonder if that interest is genuine. I just wonder if, you know, the Blue Jays are just used a lot less.
Yeah. My sense is that really could be the case, because, you know, you hear from teams here, and a lot of the GMs, to their credit, are relatively transparent with what it is that they're trying to do. So you hear from teams like Texas and Seattle and Detroit, they're willing to spend. They expect to spend. And then you've got the Yankees and the Red Sox. Those teams are giants every offseason. They tend to be very aggressive spenders as well. So you've got a pretty strong market pending all the CBA stuff. Huge factor in this. But as we enter things, it really does seem like there are a lot of teams that are willing to be aggressive, which is great. That's a really good sign to see that happening industry-wide. And the Jays are one of those teams. Like, the Jays are a team that I think we'll be in on a lot of those top free agents and guys all the way toward the bottom of the market, because they have a lot of different options at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, it's a pretty good winter to be a free agent. Last winter, not so much. This winter, I think if you're a free agent, you're feeling good about the teams that say they're going to be spending and obviously have payroll to spend. And a lot of the teams are kind of coming out of rebuilds and starting to get competitive. You think about the Seattle Mariners, and, you know, you think about the Texas Rangers who might be adding some payroll. I mean, Miami's looking to get better, probably not going to the payroll level that a number of other teams are, but they've talked about wanting to add. The Detroit Tigers, obviously, as well. Like, these aren't teams that have been big players in recent years, so that's good news. If you're a free agent, the one sort of early move that we saw to this point was Andrew Heaney going to the Dodgers, $8.5 million on a 1-year deal, pretty similar to the Robbie Ray transaction at this time last winter. First name off the board, pretty much same valuation, lefty with really good stuff. Obviously, Heaney doesn't have Ray's stuff, but he has real, like, legitimate major league pitches and has been able to get the most out of them. And look, if the Colorado Rockies had gone out and done this, I'd be like, But when the Dodgers do it, I'm like, okay, clearly Andrew Heaney can be a lot better than he's been. Clearly there's a lot of upside there and some very legitimate reason to believe that with some adjustments, some tweaks, he can perform a lot better than he has in recent season. I trust the Dodgers implicitly when they target a pitcher. What did you make of that move? And I kind of saw you reporting that the Blue Jays had some interest there as well.
Yeah, Jay's made an offer as well. He's interesting. Like you said, I mean, he's got a super high spin fastball, and a lot of the homers he allowed were basically wall scrapers. It wouldn't have gone out of every park, but he was pitching in Yankee Stadium and didn't work out for him with the Yankees. But a lot of teams had interest. Jays were among them. And it is interesting because it also shows that even though the market for the big free agents, and I would include Semien, I would include Ray in this, like, I think it's going to develop very slowly. I don't think those guys are signing until there's a new CBA. So, I don't know, February 10th, something like that. But, you know, on a smaller scale, for these smaller, medium scale deals, teams are willing to do them, which is a great sign and keeps things interesting. Here as the offseason unfolds in the first couple of weeks of November. And, you know, I think we could see more deals like this, you know, on a smaller scale for relievers, for bounce back players, for bench players. And certainly the trade market should be active too. But it's nice to get those little indications of, hey, this is how the market seems to be moving. And the Heaney deal is kind of the one that kickstarts everything right now.
Yeah, and the Ray deal last year kickstarted a very mini little run. I think Smiley went, Charlie Morton went as well in that little flurry there. So we'll see if that continues. Right now, it kind of looks like an isolated thing. You could throw Wade Miley into sort of the early offseason transactions here, picked off waivers by the Chicago Cubs. $10 million club option, which will obviously be exercised, probably already has been exercised as we talk right now. That was telling from a Blue Jays perspective in an interesting way when it comes to Steven Matz, because at the time that Wade Miley popped up on waivers, we were still kind of discussing, well, will Steven Matz get qualified? Will he not? I think you and I both sort of erred on the side of no, like you probably don't want to tie up $18 million in 1 year Steven Matz, just considering your payroll right now, even if you like the player and the Blue Jays do like the player and they think there's more upside there. But then, you know, Miley doesn't get traded with a $10 million option. And it's like, oh, okay, well now clearly Steven Matz isn't getting qualified if that's where the value's going to lie. I mean, what did you make of Miley not even, or maybe there was trade interest and teams didn't like the price at all, but you have to assume that, you know, they're would have, you know, Cincinnati would have made a move for even just a lottery ticket prospect if they could have. What'd you make of there not being a trade for Wade Miley, and then what that means for Steven Matz's value and market and free agency?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the way you kind of laid it out there. And, you know, Miley, he's making $10 million. Is that the salary for?
I think it's a $10 million dollar club option off the top of my head, yeah.
So $10 million, give or take, for Miley. And so he was claimed at that price, but no one traded for him. So that tells you the industry values him exactly at $10 million. And, you know, if that's the case, then there probably will be opportunities for the Blue Jays to sign pitchers who are comparable for less, or sign pitchers that they like better for, you know, a little bit more. You know, and we've seen that in years past. Like last year's one-year market included guys like a James Paxton or a Corey Kluber. Obviously, Robbie Ray was in that market last year. So it's a deep class. And I think that the Jays are positioned to land a couple of guys. And they remain involved on Steven Matz. I think that there is a potential fit there. But from what I'm hearing here at the GM meetings, my impression is that Steven Matz is going to have multi-year offers and potentially three-year offers for him to be choosing from. It sounds like he's very open to different geographical regions, American League, National League. He loves to hit. I mean, there's different ways this thing could unfold, and the Jays remain involved there. But it sounds like Matz is going to have a lot of choice there. And he has the same reps as Andrew Heaney. So this is clearly an agency that isn't hesitant to move quickly and to get something done. So I wouldn't be stunned if Matz is one of those guys who signs in the month of November.
The Miley thing also almost reminded me a little bit of the Brad Hand situation last offseason. Obviously very different guys, reliever, starter. Obviously Brad Hand's a bit of a tough name for Blue Jays fans, I understand. But at the time that he was on waivers last winter, very good left-handed reliever. And for much of 2021 as well, like really solid reliever, just, you know, at the trade deadline just imploded completely. But yeah, he ended up on waivers right around the same time last offseason, right around the same sort of club option situation. Like it was right around $10 million as well. Ended up passing through waivers. All 29 teams did not take a stab at him, and he ended up signing with the Nationals for like $10.5 million, like essentially the value of his club option. And I remember talking about it at the time, we were like, man, why did no one take Brad Hand? And I almost wonder if there's like just a bit of a reticence at this time of year for teams to do anything, even if it isn't that, you know, that substantial. Like $10 million obviously is substantial, but in, you know, like the context of a $150, $160 million payroll, not so much. But I just wonder if there really is just a hesitancy for teams to tie up anything right now or to do anything like that right now, and to just kind of wait and say, well, you know, we'll see how the market plays out. Are we really going to regret passing this up later on in the winter? Maybe. But if we do, then we really haven't done our job. So I just think that like a lot of teams, just there's a real reluctance to make maneuvers right now unless you really truly believe in the player you're acquiring.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where like Heaney is someone that people, the teams really liked, and they like the stuff, they like what he can bring. They're excited about that. They're making offers. But I do think, like, even for those of us who are on the outside looking in, right? Like, there's so much to take in. There are so many free agents that you're trying to take stock of. And, you know, there are also trade opportunities that, you know, you're trying to wrap your head around. And then there are minor league free agents, and there's, you know, the possibility of extensions and understanding what other teams are motivated by. And what we're trying to understand from the outside is a fraction of what the GMs and assistant GMs and agents are trying to understand from within that market. And so I just think that it takes time. We've seen this trend develop over the course of the last few off seasons, and it's not necessarily the most entertaining way for an off season to unfold. I mean, it kind of drags, and I think people still expect it to move quicker than it does, and that can lead to disappointment. But the reality is these people tend to take their time, and it tends to just go very, very slowly. And to your point regarding Miley and this market where he fits into it, teams just haven't fully understood what the other options are. And so is that the guy that they jump for? Wade Miley at 33 or whatever just didn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, it's just, it's too early for teams. Like, I think there are probably a bunch of front offices that don't even really know their final payroll number.
Sure.
At this point, right? And so adding $10 million of Wade Miley, that means one thing if your payroll is X and another if your payroll is Y. So, like, I think that, you know, it's just easy. And especially at that level, like, we're not talking about a 4 or 5 win player here, right? We're still talking about, like, a good pitcher, really solid veteran for the back end of your rotation, a guy who makes a lot of teams better. But there's going to be other options in that tier on the free agent market. So, you know, you can wait until you know exactly what your payroll is going to be. You can wait until you know exactly how some of your internal options are progressing during the winter, and you can wait to see how the market kind of plays out and what presents itself to you. I just feel like teams, and the Blue Jays especially, really value that flexibility and that kind of nimbleness and not painting themselves into any corners. So I think that's why, you know, early in the offseason, you're going to see sort of surprising names pass through waivers or not draw trade interest because, as you alluded to, for a collective group of front offices that all want to wait as long as possible and gather as much information as possible and delay, you know, things as much as possible, it just comes up a little bit too early.
And, you know, I think the Jays, like, as their position right now, they have so many different ways that they could go with this thing. And pitching is at the top of that list, but they also need to add an infielder, maybe two infielders. Like, they could add a second baseman and a third baseman. They need to add multiple starting pitchers, multiple relievers. You know, they could look at their bench and do some different things there. And they're looking at trades too. So it's almost like, you know, they have so many things and these are all in play. And whether you're talking about guys at the very top of the market, like a Marcus Semien, a Robbie Ray, Corey Seager, potentially, these are players that the Blue Jays like and will have conversations about, but that takes time too. And along with that, there are some high-end trades that they can explore. And there's just a lot of things on the table for the Blue Jays. I think that they've clearly got their plan A, they've got their plan B, their plan C. They'll walk through each one of those as the offseason unfolds and try to get the best outcome possible. But, you know, unlike some teams where it's like, okay, they need a catcher and some bullpen help, the Jays have so many ways that they can do things. That's by design. They like having that, but it doesn't lead to this very simple offseason where you just say, okay, we're going to sign like the best catcher we can, two relievers, call it a day. Like, it's just, there's so much more in play.
Yes, it's so much more to talk about after the break. We'll talk trades. We'll talk about what the Blue Jays might be looking to do over the back half of the week at the GM meetings, all that and so much more when we continue on At The Letters. It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith, who is at the GM meetings in California as we speak. It's Wednesday, November 10th. It's a busy time and not a busy time in baseball, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not a busy time if you want like finality and actual transactions and actual maneuvers, but it's a busy time behind the scenes in terms of discussions and laying things out and assistant GMs talking to other assistant GMs and then coming away from those conversations to furiously type out notes and reports and input all of that into the internal database and the system. Like every team has an internal system where they accumulate all of the information they've acquired and all the discussions, interactions that they've had for the Blue Jays. I think it's called the Beast, or they might change it to the Blue Beast, something like that. Ben, you might know.
I don't know what it was at one point in tribute to Paul Beeston, of course, the longtime president. But I'm not sure what it's called now. Maybe it's still called the Blue Beast.
I feel like, they changed it to the Big Blue Beast or something along those lines. Who cares? Doesn't matter. But like every front office exec's got like the app on their phone. And so, those things are being kind of updated and populated, and you're kind of you're formulating your strategy as you go, as you get more information. So two teams that I think the Blue Jays, I'm sure they've been talking to. I wrote 3 weeks ago that these are two teams the Blue Jays need to be talking to a lot, are the Oakland Athletics and the Cincinnati Reds. And it was pretty easy to read the tea leaves at that time that these are two clubs that have very crowded arbitration classes, and like all-star arbitration classes when you look at like Oakland and some of the names that they have eligible. So you've got increases there in salary, and those are clubs that have also been looking to shed payroll recently. And lo and behold, here they are at the GM meetings making some news saying, we've got players that we'll listen on. We have to make moves. So you look at the Oakland Athletics at the time when I wrote about them, I said Sean Manaea would be your top target. And then you could look at Chris Bassett or a Frankie Montas. I don't think that's really changed at all. I think those would be great targets for the Blue Jays as they look to acquire some pitching. When you look at the Reds, Luis Castillo is like the obvious name. I mean, he was talked about last offseason. I'm sure he's being talked about as we speak. But you've also got guys like Tyler Mahle and Sonny Gray, who you could look to take off of their hands. Maybe there's some way that Mike Moustakas ends up in a trade and he ends up, coming to play infield for you. There's quite a bit of money on his deal, but maybe that lessens the prospect cost that it would take in a trade if you were also acquiring a Castillo or a Gray or what have you. So, I mean, I just think there's a lot of opportunities there. And Ben, you were kind of identifying Cleveland as another team that the Blue Jays might want to look to talk to. I mean, what leads you down that path? Because I haven't heard their names come up too often this winter.
For sure. Well, I mean, a lot there. Let's dial it back first. I mean, to the front office stuff, it's interesting here because the Jays, it's really noteworthy. They have quite a large front office. And so, in comparison to some of these other teams, like the Angels, for instance, where you have a couple former Jays execs, but, the contrast there in front office size is pretty noteworthy. So from an information entry standpoint, from an information gathering standpoint, what the Blue Jays are attempting to do, there's no right way or wrong way here, but what the Jays are attempting to do is much more sophisticated, kind of more complicated than what some of these other teams are trying to do. So again, that could slow things down. Now, I totally agree with you on the Athletics and on the Reds. And I think that those, teams, as the offseason has unfolded since you wrote that, I think we're seeing that those teams are extremely open to dealing. And, I was able to talk to David Forst, the Oakland GM, yesterday and asked him, what's the willingness to trade some of your players? And his response is, we're open to any conversation right now. We have to be. Knowing the cycle that we've gone through after 3 or 4 years of competing, I think we have to be open to whatever other teams are asking about. Which basically, to me, that's GM speak for, look, like, we're open for business. We are willing to deal right here and right now. And that's good for the Blue Jays in a sense, because guys like Manaea and Bassett, Montas, I mean, that could be super interesting for a starting rotation. I think there's another side of this, too, where like the New York Yankees could be asking about Matt Olson, and other teams are going to try to poach this talent off of the Oakland roster. And so as much as it's a good thing for the Blue Jays, they also have to be a little wary of what's going to happen with some of their division rivals, because it's so clear that the Athletics, the Reds, these teams are open for business.
Yeah, but I just think that for the Blue Jays, like, it's so important to make a trade. this offseason. Like, I really do think it's a lever they're going to have to pull. You just look at where they're at right now with young players starting to get expensive. You need to start thinking about whether you're going to extend a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or a Bo Bichette. You've already got a mega contract with George Springer on the books and $40 million left for Hyunjin Ryu. You got money to spend, certainly. And I think the Blue Jays can swallow another mega contract for a position player, likely, when you just kind of look at this market. But I think that their payroll would be a lot more efficient if it was a Minaya or a Castillo or a Montes filling in one of those rotation holes rather than what's $36 million for Max Scherzer, you know, rather than, I don't know, Rodon or Rodriguez or one of these guys who are going to cost you a bunch of money. Like, if you can make a deal for a player who's still going through arbitration and whose earning power is suppressed via that process, you can get some pretty good production from a player who's not going to cost you as much and kind of deploy that payroll to other areas of the roster, whether that is obviously the one or two infielders that the Blue Jays are going to need to acquire, whether that's going out and getting an outfielder because maybe you're trading Lourdes Gurriel Jr. or Randall Grichuk in one of these maneuvers. Maybe it's getting a catcher because an Alejandro Kirk's going out the door in one of these trades. Or maybe you're making a more aggressive bullpen ad in free agency than we've seen from this club in recent years because you look at missing the postseason by one game in 2021. It's pretty easy to point to bullpen struggles early in the season for why that happens. So I think that just if you want to use your money in the most efficient way possible, it makes a lot of sense for the Blue Jays to go look to trade for a controllable starting pitcher.
100%. I mean, if that's something you can do, then that's a great move, you know, and adding Barrios is a start on that front, but you always want more of that. And the Jays are in a good position. Like, it's even interesting because, you know, we're so in the Blue Jays bubble, especially in the last couple of years, because, you know, we've physically been in Toronto more and removed from the broader landscape of Major League Baseball a little bit more than usual. And, you know, being here and hearing from some of these smaller market GMs, like, man, they are striking a different tone. Like, to hear, yeah, you know, David Forrest talk, or, you know, Nick Kroll of the Reds, or Chris Antonetti of Cleveland, of the Guardians, who I also spoke to yesterday. Like, they're talking like, yeah, we got to be open to trading our best players. We have to be open to anything. You know, Chris Antonetti asked about payroll yesterday. It's like, yeah, we got some stuff that we can do. You know, we can, you know, we can probably add here and there, but it's so different than the way the Blue Jays talk about free agency, where it's like, as when we had Ross Atkins on the podcast last week, I mean, he's talking as though they can add some of the best players, not all of them at once, but they can be in on those best players in a way that these small market teams can. And so, you know, you mentioned Cleveland before, and I think, you know, again, hearing from Antonetti, okay, what is Cleveland trying to do this offseason? Well, he mentions catching. He mentions they have a lot of infielders they like, both at the major league and minor league level, so potentially outfield. And, you know, I asked him directly about Jose Ramirez and would they move Jose Ramirez? And of course, he talks about how much he loves Jose Ramirez and how great he's been on and off the field for that organization. But then he says, we also have to listen. We have to be open to this. And so, you know, my mind starts thinking, what would that look like? And okay, they need catching. The Blue Jays have Jansen and Kirk. Like, that's a potential surplus. Cleveland wants outfielders. The Jays have a surplus of outfielders. I mean, there is a potential match there. And whether that leads anywhere is another question, because it might not. Either side could look at this and say, yeah, it's just not a fit. It just doesn't quite add up. And they're both very valuation oriented and very disciplined in the way that they look at things. But on paper, there's a possible structure there that you could look at with Kirk or Jansen, plus Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who makes very little money, as we've talked about extensively, and maybe something else. And does that get a conversation started? Because that would address the Jays' biggest positional need.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at those big names we're going to be hearing about all winter until something happens with them. Jose Ramirez, Ketel Marte, Minaya, Castillo. I mean, these are going to be some of the big names on the trade market. the Blue Jays obviously need to be setting their sights on those guys, need to be involved in those discussions. But that doesn't mean they need to block themselves off from doing something maybe not quite as splashy, but that could be just as impactful. And I think there will be plenty of kind of, you know, middle tier moves to make on this trade market as well. Like, you look at the Miami Marlins as an organization with a ton of young starting pitching, and they've kind of talked about how, like, yeah, maybe that's an area of surplus that we could deal from. It's amazing to be in a position as an organization with so much good young starting pitching that you can look at it as, you know, expendable in any way. But the Marlins need catching depth, just like Cleveland does. They need catchers. So obviously you mentioned the catchers the Blue Jays have to offer. And with Miami, like, I can't imagine that they would talk about, like, you know, an Alcantara or Rogers. But what about, like, an Elysier Hernandez? You know, like, there are still, you know, really good names in that organization, you know, beyond kind of the marquee guys. I wrote about Elysier Hernandez 3 weeks ago as well as a guy the Blue Jays should be targeting. Also wrote about Merrill Kelly as a guy the Blue Jays could target with the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, Arizona's not going to win next year, and they've got one more year left on Kelly, I think, at, like, you know, I think it's right around that $10 million range that Wade Miley was making, or it actually might be like, it might be like 5 or 6 million. Like, it's super, super cheap for a guy who's been very dependable. Like I said, not a sexy name, not, you know, a splashy name, but a guy who could be available and a guy who would fill a rotation hole, help you towards the back end, give you that cost efficiency I was talking about, while you go out and spend big on whatever, Kershaw, Ray, Verlander, whoever, like a big name to fill that rotation hole at the top of your staff. You could look towards the bullpen as well. I wrote about Chad Kuhl a number of weeks ago from the Pittsburgh Pirates as a guy who, you know, looks like his future in Pittsburgh is somewhat in question, didn't have the season he would have liked to as a starter, has really premium big league stuff. And he's a year from free agency. He's already started to make that transition to the bullpen. I wondered if he was a guy who maybe the Blue Jays could target as a relief option and somebody who they could use in a late inning role, give him a full spring training to, like, get used to that transition, get used to the role, figure out who he is as a reliever and how his stuff works most effectively. Obviously, sell him on working with Pete Walker and Matt Bushman, some of the life that they've gotten out of, you know, similar pitchers who are in his position, and say, hey, come here, have a great year with us pitching out of our bullpen, great platform year into free agency. You can go make a whole bunch of money as a high leverage reliever. Like, I think that some of those under the radar options could really be good alternatives for the Blue Jays, as well as the obvious Ramirez's and Kettle Martes of this world.
Right. And, you know, maybe there's a way to, in the course of this offseason, which, you know, the pacing is going to be, it's going to be really different. It's going to be really probably disjointed, because you'll have this month of November where we can actually have baseball talk and we can actually talk about potential trades and the qualifying offers kind of drive the market. Then there's probably going to be a pause, probably going to be a lockout for 2 months, and then it'll resume again with this flurry in February. So, you know, within that, though, there's a possibility in that first kind of chunk of the offseason that we're now in the midst of for a team like the Blue Jays to potentially acquire one of those more back-end options that you're talking about here. Someone who could be a bounce-back candidate, where you're going to need two starters if you're the Blue Jays. And as long as you're still talking to a Robbie Ray and you have your Kevin Gausmans out there and these top-line starters, well, okay, you can keep that door open. It might take a while to see where all that leads. And in the meantime, you can fill one of those two spots, knowing that it's not going to close anything off. And I think that the Jays' interest in Heaney and Matz kind of reflects, and I'm sure they're doing this on the trade front as well, but it reflects a willingness to move relatively soon to address at least one of those rotation spots.
Yeah, you just can't expect that a Gausman or a Ray or a Semien is going to come off the board anytime soon. When you have so much work to get done, if you can find a tidy piece of work to do, you're going to do it. I mean, you look at how much of this market Scott Boras controls, and what do we know about Scott Boras? His players don't sign until uber late. Like, they hold that leverage forever, often into spring training, like into camps already in full swing. And players are still waiting and still, you know, holding out for their value. Like Ben, if you're the Blue Jays, like, you're obviously meeting with Scott Boras possibly this week at some point, because you're going to be interested in his clients. There's no more quote unquote blue flu. There's none of that. Like you're willing to engage with them. Like, what do you think that meeting actually looks like? Like, what are those discussions like? Because there are so many names that you're going to be discussing with Scott Boras. So obviously, like, the Blue Jays hold some cards here in being a team that can like spend and pay for his premium talent. But Scott Boras holds quite a bit of leverage as well, just because he controls so much of the market.
Oh, yeah. And this is where, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, it makes sense to have that relationship with Scott Boras. And, you know, it's one that they've seemed to have developed pretty well in the last couple of years with a deal with Ryu and signing Austin Martin as a first rounder. So, you know, I think in those meetings, my sense is that teams and agents will discuss almost the entire client list of that agent. Like, if you're sitting down with Scott Boras, you're going to do it, as you say, completely agree. That's a high priority. Like, it might be, you know, a top two or three, you know, meeting that they need to be bumping other meetings for to make sure that, you know, in this case, that's probably, is it Joe Sheehan and Ross Atkins? And they've got other front office members here as well joining the GM here at the GM meetings. But you have to make sure that you are making that meeting happen. And my sense is that Scott Boras runs through his clients and he says, hey, here's what we got on Scherzer. Here's what he's looking for. Bryant, Conforto, you got Castellanos, you've got Carlos Rodon, you've got Corey Seager, of course, Marcus Semien. And you're not going to schedule separate meetings for each one of those guys. It's not like you're going to do a Zoom with Scott Boras on Monday regarding Marcus Semien and then meet him in person on Tuesday to talk about Nick Castellanos. You're going to do it all at once. So in that sense, is that the Blue Jays expressing interest in all of those guys at once? I mean, I guess it is, right? But until that kind of gains some traction, until that kind of gets off the ground, then that interest is preliminary, sincere, I think, but preliminary, and then we'll see where it goes.
Well, and my understanding of like a Scott Boras meeting is that it is not a short meeting.
Right.
And that there is a lot of presentations, even like there is a lot of data brought to the table by Scott Boras. Like there is quite a bit of information that he is throwing at the team. Like he is, you know, like he has a very clear like narrative, like a very clear you know, I don't know, mission, I guess, or goal in that meeting. You know, there is something he's trying to get across. So I think that just from what I've heard of what it's like in those meetings with him is that it can actually be like quite intense and like quite a lot of like very fast moving information and negotiation.
Yeah, it's interesting. And each agent has their own style. Boras, of course, has a style of his own. But, you know, in talking to other agents here, like it's interesting, even in the course of, let's say, the last 10 years, how much more agents now just talk without any hesitation. Like it's totally fluid. And they talk about ex-WOBA and they talk about his expected home runs, or he should have hit more home runs, or, you know, his sprint speed was this. Like it is just, they assume that you know what they're talking about. And this is the way they talk to teams as well, because that's what teams talk about. And so the agents have to speak that language. If you're sitting there talking about, you know, just your innings pitched and your ERA, well, that's not really how the Los Angeles Dodgers work. So you probably need to adjust the way that you speak. And I find that kind of interesting too.
Yeah, you can't be the agent coming in and saying, oh, well, he had like 120 ribbies. So nope. Yeah, he's great. Just as we wrap up, is there, like we've talked about a lot of the big names, obviously, like is there anything kind of off the beaten path that you've come across there that you've heard? Could be a big name as well, but is there something that maybe you want to shed a little bit of a spotlight on that you've gleaned this week at the GM meetings that maybe hasn't been a very big story to this point?
I got two little things here. So, and I don't think either one will surprise you. Probably won't surprise a lot of our listeners, but maybe worth touching on at least. So one, Gabriel Moreno, obviously having an incredible season, incredible year, just hitting the cover off the ball in the Arizona Fall League. And he's someone who Ross Atkins is talking about a lot. And just, you know, this is a lot of it outside, you know, media questions directed toward Ross Atkins at the GM meetings. But he was saying that this is a player that he gets asked about a lot, whether it's from, you know, just in casual conversation. I don't mean that teams are necessarily trying to acquire him. That's probably not going to end well for that other team. I think he's basically untouchable for the Jays. But that's been, you know, a topic here, which I'm sure doesn't surprise you.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I suppose you just look at every night at the Arizona Fall League, like it's a highlight show with him. It's unbelievable. He's been on the 40-man for a couple of years now, touched AAA at the end of the season. Obviously, I think some of that was just like making up for lost time. Like, I think some of the fall league too is making up for lost time with him. And I think he might actually continue on to play in winter league after this, just to get some more reps, because obviously he had that injury midseason when he was just torching double A, and that kind of set him back a little bit. So I think it's the Blue Jays just getting him as much experience out of this season as they can. But I mean, he's going to be right there. Like, he's a triple A ball player out of spring training next year, unless like something crazy happens and he makes the team. It's not out of the question, but I think most likely he's a triple A player out of spring training. And then he's right on the doorstep, man. And he's like, we've seen, like, if he's going nuts in triple A and the Blue Jays have an opening in the big leagues, he's on the 40. I don't think he's that far off from the big leagues, really. Like, I think he's pretty damn close, man. And what's really interesting is him, when he was rehabbing the injury at the player development complex in Florida, taking some reps at third base and then starting to see it in game a little bit. I don't know that he's going to be an everyday third baseman for anyone, but if he can be that like Russell Martin type, who is like the catcher and third baseman, boy, does that unlock some things for your roster, and does that open up some possibilities. So there's like some very intriguing stuff happening with Gabe Moreno. And as things stand right now today, there's a very good chance that he's wearing a Blue Jays uniform at some point in 2022.
Yeah, let's hope so. He'll be really fun to watch. And the other thing I'll just kind of mention here is my sense is that the Jays are actually in a good spot, like in a better spot than they were this time last winter for a couple reasons. One, they won 91 games. So that, I think, truly helps them. And I've been told that some free agents have actually approached the Jays. Like, prominent free agents have initiated that conversation, expressed, hey, like, you know, keep us in mind as you're going through your offseason. So you like to see that. That can only help. In addition to that, there's certainty, or, you know, at least more certainty as to where they're playing, which helps. And it kind of eliminates one question that potential free agents would have. And then beyond that, too, I had someone here mentioned to me, go out of their way to mention to me the player development complex. And, you know, if it's coming from Mark Shapiro, then okay, we understand this is something that he believes in. He's talking it up. But if someone who's just totally independent of the Blue Jays is talking about the impact that that's had, then, you know, you start to think maybe this is making some, I don't want to say waves, but people are noticing and appreciating it within the industry. And so I think those three things, you know, winning, having some certainty about where they're playing, player development complex, I think it puts them in a better spot. And look, that doesn't win them a single game. It doesn't get them a single RBI or strikeout or any of that stuff until you actually use it to acquire better players and to develop better players. But you'd rather be in that position than not.
Here's the thing, like, players talk to each other, right? So, you know, and I think now more so than ever, I think the bonds between players are stronger because they've all come up through whatever it is, these elite travel ball teams and academies, or, you know, like you see it, like a lot of the, you know, Dominican guys are all hanging out together when they go, you know, when they go back home for the winter, like they're training together. Like, I was talking to a Blue Jays player who's been working out at the PDC this off season, and like he was telling me about, like, you know, telling some of his like buddies that who have the same agent as him, when they, you know, had a recent little kind of like gathering, they went, you know, everybody went golfing, and he was talking at the PDC to them, he's talking at the PDC to me, and you know, trashing the Bobby Maddox Center pretty thoroughly. Yeah. Because look, the Bobby Maddox Center was like below the standard of a lot of high schools in the United States. I mean, it was 30 of 30. And now the Blue Jays are 1 of 30 when it comes to we don't even call them spring training complexes anymore, right? A player development complex and a place that has every amenity and everything that you need to get better and to work out. And there is like a very solid contingent of Blue Jays players down there this winter working out at the PDC. Like, you know, Jordan Romano's there, Barucki's there, Thomas Hatch is there, Nate Pearson is there. Like, there are a lot of guys down there working out this winter. So like, that word just like gets around the league. So players are going to start to understand, like, oh yeah, hey, the Blue Jays have some like really good resources and facilities that I'm going to be able to use. Like, you think about what's important to a player in free agency, and I would say it's like three primary things: money, location, and chance to win, right? Blue Jays have money to offer, money to spend. They've proven it each of the last two winters, and they've talked about spending money again this offseason. They have a chance to win. You have the proof of concept last year, 91 wins with a young core, with something that looks sustainable. It's not like a, oh, are the Giants going to be this good again next year? Like, there aren't that many, you know, it's not a veteran roster. It's a young team that should be together and should be competitive for many years to come. So they have that. Like, the one question I think for a lot of guys will just be location. And as you said, they settled some of it where it's, we're going to be in Toronto next year. There shouldn't be any question about that. You're not going to have to deal with three homes. I do think there are still some players who have the hesitancy with playing in a foreign country, with to Canada. And I think there are some players who prefer spring training in Arizona a lot more than spring training in Florida is a big one. There's some guys who just want to be on the West Coast, and there's some teams that are going to win with a lot of money to spend on the West Coast as well. So there's some other options there. But the Blue Jays have just kind of like steadily checked some more boxes that would appeal to free agents. So as you kind of allude to, I'm not that surprised to hear that the Blue Jays are more of an attractive destination this winter, because they've checked more of those boxes progressively over the last several years.
Yeah, of course. And I know you've seen that kind of firsthand as that's developed, and now they're in a position where they can actually use that to their advantage. Now, okay, if you use that to sign this offseason's Kendrys Morales and Tanner Roark, then it doesn't really do you much good. Yeah. Great, those guys want to sign with you. Well, you have to sign the right players. You have to sign the players that are going to help you win. And that's where it comes down to player evaluation. And, you know, it's not just the recruitment aspect. You have to successfully identify the guys who are going to help you win games. And so they have to do that. That is never easy. It went very well for them last offseason when they signed Ray and Semien and Springer, but it doesn't always go that well. And the stakes are very high when you're talking about the kind of dollars that the Blue Jays are in a position to spend. So they got to get it right. And that's what the next couple months are about.
No doubt there'll be much to talk about over the next couple months as the off season proceeds, and then maybe around December 1st takes a bit of a pause, and then hopefully picks up steam not too long after that with a new CBA and some momentum moving forward to spring training 2022, which hopefully will begin on time right around Valentine's Day 2022. Fingers crossed that that's what's going to happen, but we're going to step away. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. He's on Twitter at @BNicholsonSmith. Read everything he is producing from the GM meetings at sportsnet.ca. My name's Arden Zwelling. Our producer is Christian Ryan. Thanks as always for his help, and to Nick Andrade as well on the video side. Thank you, Nick, and thank you everyone for listening. Talk to you next time on At the Letters.